But of course, the Jewish authorities have a problem. The Jews no longer had the power to put anyone to death. They were under Roman occupation, and the Romans reserved for themselves the right to execute the guilty. So Pilate has got to, the Roman governor has got to sentence Jesus to death if the will of the Sanhedrin is to be carried out. Hence we come to what's described as the civil trial. Jesus is brought before Pilate. So please have that reading open in front of you. We're going to take the whole reading. John chapter 18, verse 28 to 19, verse 16. Please have it open in front of you. It'll help you as we go through these things together. Now, there are seven movements in John's account of the trial, if you like, seven scenes. And we alternate between inside the governor's headquarters, called the Praetorium, and outside the Praetorium. And we're either inside with Jesus, or we're on the outside with the Jews. And we find Pilate, he shuttles, as it were, backwards and forwards between the two. And it soon becomes very clear that Pilate doesn't want to make a decision. He wants to get shot of the problem. He wants this Jesus to go away. Look, this is a Jewish problem. It's got nothing to do with me. It's a religious problem. And what's a religious problem got to do with me? And you get the sense of it sometimes. You know, there's Pilate, and history books tell us he may have even come from Scotland. He's a long way from home. And there he is, he's stuck with you lot. And there he is, he's trying to keep the peace, trying to keep a lid on things. And really, early on a Friday morning, this is the last thing I want. But Jesus won't go away. And there's a sense in which Pilate is just as much on trial as Jesus. Now, John's account of this trial has a lovely architecture to it. As we said, there are seven scenes. And scene one parallels scene seven. Scene two, scene six. Scene three parallels scene five. And sitting in the middle is scene four. And in scenes one and seven, we're outside with the Jews who are demanding Jesus' death. In scenes two and six, we're inside with Jesus, discussing his identity. And then in scenes 3 and 5, we're outside again with Pilate protesting Jesus' innocence. And John draws a contrast between two men, as Barabbas and Jesus. And then in scene 4, which says it was sits in the middle, we're inside with the soldiers scourging Jesus. So what we're going to do is we're going to follow through the seven scenes. It's a court case. Let's follow it together, and we'll move quite quickly, and we'll try to catch something of the drama and the movement that is taking place. So to scene 1, verses 28 to 32 of chapter 18, we're outside with the Jews. Verse 28, then they, that's the Jews, the Jewish leadership, led Jesus from Caiaphas to the Praetorium, the governor's headquarters, and it was early morning. But they themselves did not go into the Praetorium, lest they should be defiled, but that they might eat the Passover. And immediately, the hypocrisy is breathtaking, isn't it? The irony of it all. Here are these men, they're planning a murder, they want to shed the blood of the Son of God. Oh, but we wouldn't dare enter a Gentile home. Oh, no, no, no. If we went into the Praetorium, that would make us unclean, and we'd be unclean for 7 days, and unclean for 7 days, we therefore couldn't celebrate the Passover feast. So Pilate, verse 29, has to go out to them. And he asks them, what's the charge? You've brought this man to me, what are the charges? And then you get in the sense of verse 30, they're saying, ah. Because, of course, the charge which they have made won't stand up in a Roman court. The Romans aren't bothered about someone calling himself the Son of God or someone calling himself the Messiah. As long as someone doesn't cause any trouble. After all, this is Palestine. These are the Jews. The whole country is full of fanatics and religious nutters. So the Romans aren't bothered about these things. So the Jews say, well, you'll just have to take our word for it. He's a criminal. He's an evildoer. Which, of course, is no accusation at all. That won't stand up in court, will it? Just say, I don't like the man. Look, take our word for it. He's an evildoer. There's got to be a specific charge. And so Pilate, verse 31, dismisses them. He says, Pilate says to them, you take him and judge him according to your law. You sort it out. This has got nothing to do with the Romans. It's got nothing to do with me. And now these men are forced to break cover. Verse 31. Therefore the Jews said to him, it is not lawful for us to put anyone to death. And now Pilate knows their real intention. They want a death. Actually, they want more than a death. They want a crucifixion, which only the Romans can provide. See, Caiaphas knew his Bible, and he knew what it said in the book of Deuteronomy. If a man has committed a sin deserving of death, and he is put to death, and you hang him on a tree, his body is not to remain overnight on the tree, but you shall surely bury him that day, so that you do not defile the land which the Lord your God is giving you as an inheritance. And then it says this is the reason. For he who is hanged is accursed of God. If you hung a criminal on a tree, the message was clear to everyone. This man is cursed by God. So if Jesus is crucified, if he is hung on a tree, then as far as the Jews are concerned, the whole world, the whole Jewish world will know that this man, this Jesus of Nazareth, is cursed by God. And that will be the end of this Jesus movement forever. But says John, this is all in the plan. Verse 32, that the saying of Jesus might be fulfilled, which he spoke, signifying by what death he would die. Jesus has already spoken about this. He talks about it in John 12. John 12, verse 32, Jesus says, and I, if I am lifted up from the earth, will draw all peoples to myself. This he said, signifying by what death he would die. Now the usual death for blasphemy was stoning. But says Jesus, the death I am to die is one where I will be lifted up. I am to be lifted up on a cross to die under the curse of God. And so we move to scene two, because now we're inside with Jesus. Verses 33 to 38. Verse 33, then Pilate entered the praetorium again, called Jesus and said to him, are you the king of the Jews? Perhaps Pilate's tone is mocking. After all, Jesus has been through that ecclesiastical trial. Think of how he looks. He's bruised, he's bloodied, his hair is full of men's spit. All his followers have run away. As though Pilate says to him, look, I know kings. I've been in the presence of kings. And you're no king. You, king of the Jews. Jesus answered him, verse 34, are you speaking for yourself about this, or did others tell you concerning me? Do you really want to know? Are you just parroting what you've heard, or are you asking me? Do you really want to know if I'm the king of the Jews? Verse 35, Pilate answered, am I a Jew? Oh, let's not get discussions about the Jews. Do you expect me to understand the Jews? Come on, you must have done something. Well, you wouldn't be here. So what have you done? Verse 36. Jesus answered, my kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would fight, so that I should not be delivered to the Jews. But now my kingdom is not from here. I have not done anything, says Jesus, to trouble Caesar. I'm not that sort of king. I'm not fomenting revolution. I'm not to come to establish my kingdom by force of arms. No navies sail in my name. No armies march in my name. My kingdom is not of this world. My kingdom is not from here. Because this world is in rebellion. This is a different sort of kingdom, a different sort of king. This world's in rebellion, and this is the world that will nail the king to a cross. So Pilate's drawn in a bit more into this discussion. Verse 37, are you a king then? So he's saying, so you are a king then. You really are. You rightly say that I am a king. For this cause I was born, and for this cause I have come into the world, that I should bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth hears my voice. Yes, I am a king, says Jesus. But not like Caesar. I was born to be king. I came into this world to be king. And in a world that will reject the king, in this very world, I will establish my kingdom. And I've come to tell you the truth. Now, during the Second World War, on the Melanesian Islands in the Pacific Ocean, the islanders watched with astonishment as at first Japanese aircraft and then later American aircraft brought in huge amounts of supplies. The aircraft would fly in. We've all seen aircraft come in, but it's the first time I've ever seen it. An aircraft came in, landed, and unloaded. And the islanders saw things they'd never seen before. Things like canned fruit and tents and weapons and clothes they'd never seen before and medicines. And those things were shared with the islanders. Well, of course, after the war, the planes stopped coming. And there were no more gifts. And as they thought, no more gifts from our ancestors. No more gifts from the gods. So what did the islanders do? They wanted the planes to return. They wanted the gifts to come back. How do we get the planes to return? Well, they copied what they'd seen. What had they seen? They'd seen control towers. So they built control towers. And they sat in control towers with headphones made of carved wood on their heads. And they went into the jungle, they cut new airstrips. And when planes landed, there always are other planes on the ground. So they built straw planes and dotted them around, hoping that other planes would come and join them. And they stood on the runways they'd made, waving their hand signals, because they'd seen that and planes used to arrive. And they'd wave their hands and no planes came. And in fact, on these islands, a whole cult developed. And they even dressed up in uniforms that looked like US Army uniforms. And they made wooden rifles, and they paraded, dressed as American soldiers, they paraded up and down with wooden rifles in the hope that the planes would come. But the planes never came. Until someone came from the outside into their world to tell them the truth. Now, my friends, we're followers of a cult. We try to make sense of things we don't understand. And we perform all sorts of bizarre behaviors, don't we? And rituals. And we believe all sorts of crazy things. We believe in that little drop of primeval sludge. In that were all of Beethoven's symphonies, all nine of them, in that little drop of primeval sludge. And in that sludge, there's also the space shuttle. And there were walruses. They're all that primeval sludge. And Richard Dawkins was in there too, somewhere. Trying to make sense of it all. We don't know where we came from, do we? We don't know why we feel like we feel. Why do I feel empty? Why do I feel at times guilty? Why do we suffer? What's the point of it all? What happens when I die? Why are we here at all? And you see, it's because we've walked out on God. And we don't understand. And we've believed the lie, as the Bible puts it. But what does Jesus say here? He says he's come from outside the world. He's come into our world. And he's come to tell us the truth. And that he himself is that truth. So that by knowing him, it makes sense of it all. You rightly say that I am a king. For this cause I was born. And for this cause I have come into the world, that I should bear witness to the truth. There's all sorts of truth, isn't there? 2 + 2 = 4. There's truth that comes in a test tube, but there's a truth that makes sense of everything else. That's the truth he's come to make known. And everyone who is of the truth hears my voice. I am the answer to the real questions you have about life and death and joy and reality and meaning and satisfaction and sin and judgment and heaven and hell. And if you're on the side of truth, he says, you'll hear my voice. And in that moment, Jesus gives Pilate an open door. There's a sense you feel almost Jesus saying, ask me any question. Do you want answers, Pilate? Because you see, when it comes to God and life and death, it's not enough to guess, is it? And hope for the best. And stick on the wooden headphones. Do you want to know the truth? But Pilate's not listening. Are you? Verse 38. Pilate said to him, what is truth? It's a weary answer, isn't it? Don't talk to me about truth. So into scene 3. Back outside with the Jews, verse 38. Pilate said to him, what is truth? And when he had said this, he went out again to the Jews and said to them, I find no fault in him at all. As far as I'm concerned, this man, he's innocent. Remember, Pilate's a politician. Politicians love doing deals. So Pilate tries to do a deal. Look, I want him released, you want him convicted. So how about verse 39? Why don't we do a deal? Why don't we do a compromise? What we'll do is this. We'll call Jesus guilty. We'll put him on the same level as a notorious criminal. The man who the other Gospels tell us is a murderer, a revolutionary, a man by the name of Barabbas. So technically Jesus is convicted. And then through a little custom of yours, we can have Jesus released. What do you think? You get your conviction and I get my release. A perfect fudge. Verse 39. But you have a custom that I should release someone to you. At the Passover, do you therefore want me to release to you the King of the Jews? But the crowd sent weakness. Pragmatic politicians who want to do deals can be manipulated. So the crowd shout back, verse 40, not this man, not Jesus, but Barabbas. Now Barabbas was a robber. So Pilate's little compromise fails. That's very telling, isn't it? The gathering crowd stirred up by the chief priests, they would rather release a convicted murderer, rather have a convicted murderer on the streets of Jerusalem than the man who went about doing good. Pilate's problem, this Jesus, he won't go away. I can't get rid of this problem. But scene 4, Pilate's not finished yet. Because he hands Jesus over to the Roman soldiers. Chapter 19, verse 1. So then Pilate took Jesus and scourged him. And the soldiers twisted a crown of thorns and put it on his head. And they put on him a purple robe. And they said, Hail, King of the Jews! And they struck him with their hands. They're Roman soldiers, aren't they? These are the most disciplined, powerful soldiers of the ancient world. And they flogged Jesus. And you'll probably know that the whips they had impregnated in them pieces of bone, pieces of metal, so that when the whip struck a man's back, those little bits of bone would claw their way into the back, so that when you took the whip away, you took some of the flesh from the back. These are floggings that would strip the flesh off a man's back. They were floggings that would frequently kill a man. And now here's Jesus. His back is torn, lacerated. Psalm 129 speaks of his back being plowed. And from the furrows of the plowing, you get rivulets of blood. But now the entertainment begins. Because you can hear the soldier speaking, can't you? This one says he's the King of the Jews. Well, we despise the Jews. He says he's the King of the Jews. Well, if he's a king, he needs a crown, doesn't he? Verse 2. So the soldiers twisted a crown of thorns and put it on his head. And if he's a king, well, he needs to look like a king, doesn't he? Let's dress him up. Verse 2. And they put on him a purple robe. And if he's a king, well, we better pledge our loyalty. Verse 3. Then they said, Hail, King of the Jews. And they take it in turns to come, excuse me, and bow before the king. And then as they stand up, they smash their fists into his face. And they struck him with their hands. You hear the laughter, can't you? He's the carnival king. He's the royal fool. And there's Jesus, the true man, silent, suffering, sinless. And he's suffering for the sinner's crime. Well, to scene number five. Will Pilate's plan work? He's back outside with the Jews. Verse 4, behold, I'm bringing him out to you that you may know that I find no fault in him. Verse 5, then Jesus came out wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe, and Pilate said to them, behold the man. And what do they see? Well, Isaiah tells us that his face was marred more than any man. What does that mean? It means Jesus' agonies were unique. They're in a class of their own. And his face is marred more than any man. So extreme, even to this point, have Jesus' sufferings been, his appearance so disfigured, that he's no longer recognizable. Doesn't even look human. Behold the man. It's as though Pilate is saying, look, isn't this enough? I know you want him dead. I'm not prepared for that. So we've beaten him to a pulp. Isn't that enough? Aren't you satisfied now? Does he look like a threat to you? Can't we now just let him go? But they sent blood. Verse 6, therefore when the chief priests and officers saw him, they cried out saying, crucify him! Crucify him! Pilate said to them, you take him and crucify him, for I find no fault in him. I want nothing more to do with this, says Pilate. You sort it out. You do it yourself. But verse 7, Pilate's resistance forces the Jews to disclose their hand in full. Look at verse 7. The Jews answered him, we have a law, and according to our law, he ought to die. Why? Because he made himself the Son of God. This Galilean, he lays claim to deity. And in our law, that's the greatest blasphemy of all. So in a sense, we don't care what you Romans think. He must die. Therefore, when Pilate heard that saying, he was the more afraid. There's something about this Jesus. Is he divine? And perhaps Pilate senses that he's out of his depth. He's never been in this situation ever before. There's more going on here than I first thought. And he's afraid. And so scene number 6, we're back inside, we're face to face with Jesus, verses 9 to 11. Look at verse 9. Okay, your kingdom's not of this world. So where are you from? He's asking questions about Jesus' identity. But Jesus doesn't answer him. And Pilate's is a bit needled by it, isn't he? Verse 10, are you not speaking to me? Do you not know that I have power to crucify you and power to release you? Don't you know who I am? Don't you recognize the power that I have over you, that in my word is life and death? I can have you crucified, I can have you released. Does Jesus plead for his life? The lesser pleading with the greater? Does he entreat Pilate as an equal? No, the king simply speaks. Verse 11. You could have no power at all against me unless it had been given you from above. Therefore, the one who delivered me to you has the greater sin. You only have authority, Pilate, because that authority has been given to you. It's a delegated authority. God has given you that authority. and Pilate, your actions condemn you. Scourging an innocent man. But then again, you've been presented with this problem, haven't you? So the ones with the greatest sin are the ones who presented me to you, the ones who are seeking to put me to death. Which brings us to our final scene, scene 7, verses 12 to 16, which is a scene of manipulation. Very interesting the way it happens. Look at verse 12. From then on, Pilate sought to release him, but the Jews cried out, saying, "If you let this man go, you are not Caesar's friend. Whoever makes himself a king speaks against Caesar." So we know where Pilate's intent is. He's twisting this way and that, isn't he? He's tried everything. He's tried to do a deal with them, Barabbas, Jesus. He's had Jesus flogged. Isn't that enough for you? I don't find any fault with him. He's twisting this way and that to get Jesus released. But the Jews know the measure of their man. And it's now that they play their ace. Because they say, "What will Caesar say if you let this man go? He's bound to hear Caesar. Because we'll tell him. What will he say? You, Pilate, you let a rebel king go? Didn't you put Rome first? Didn't you put Caesar first? What sort of governor are you? What will Caesar say?" And it's the ace that trumps all Pilate's cards. Verse 30, when Pilate therefore heard that saying, he brought Jesus out and sat down in the judgment seat in the place that is called the pavement, but in Hebrew, Gabbatha. And now we sense, don't we, the solemnity of this moment. Pilate's about to give sentence. And there is Jesus. He is standing before us all. Verse 14, now it was the preparation day of the Passover. And about the sixth hour. It's almost a sense of saying, well, what time is it, John? And John says, well, it's late morning. It's about the sixth hour. Because they counted the hour from sunrise. The sixth hour. Isn't that the time when the priests start to slaughter the Passover lambs in the temple? And here's the Lamb of God who takes away the sin of the world. And he's about to be slaughtered on a cross. Well, if the crowd manipulate Pilate, what will Caesar say? Pilate, the wily politician, will manipulate the crowd. He'll manipulate them to take the greater part of the responsibility for what is about to happen. Look at what he says. Verse 14. And he said to the Jews, "Behold your king." It's a red rag to a bull, isn't it? Verse 15, but they cried, "Away with him! Away with him! Crucify him!" Pilate said to them, "Shall I crucify your king?" The chief priests answered, "We have no king but Caesar." Amazing, isn't it? To reject the Son of God, these holy men, they protest their loyalty to a pagan emperor. And it's amazing, isn't it, where hatred of Jesus will drive you. These holy men, on paper, the most religious, holy men in all the world, the men who won't even go into the praetorium lest they be defiled. And there they are at the end saying, "The only king we have is a pagan emperor." It's amazing where hatred of Jesus will drive you. It will drive you to madness and damnation. Then he delivered him to them to be crucified. So they took Jesus and led him away. So here we are. We're at the center of history. We're in Jerusalem. There's a sense in which we're at the center of the world. On the one hand, we have the Romans. And on the other hand, we have the Jews. We have the greatest power the world had seen. We have the most noble religion the world has seen. And here is the world in microcosm. And together they conspire to execute the only true innocent, the King, the Man, the Son of God, the Lamb of God, who is dying as the Saviour of the world. Well, it's time to close. Who's on trial? Is it Jesus or is it Pilate? Pilate doesn't want to make a decision. He doesn't want to get involved. These Jews may hate Jesus, but I haven't got a problem with him. But in the end, he's forced to choose, isn't he? To choose between truth and lies, light and darkness. He's forced to choose between Christ and Caesar. And we watch him shuttling backwards and forth, pacing that trodden path between the praetorium and the outside, back and forth, until he comes to his decision. And in the end, he rejects Jesus and condemns himself. In the end, Pilate lost everything. History tells us that he committed suicide. So as we close, what of you? Jesus is here. And like Pilate, we are all on trial. What will you do with this Jesus? He's the King. So will you bow the knee? He's the Man. So will you follow him? He's the Son of God. So will you worship him? He's the Passover Lamb. He's the Lamb of God who takes away the sin of the world. It's his blood that shields sinners from the wrath to come. So will you run to this Jesus for shelter, for safety, for forgiveness? What will you do? And you see, just like the situation we've been reading about with Pilate, this is the Jesus who won't go away. You can't live and let live with this Jesus. You can't get rid of the problem. Maybe life was a lot easier before you heard about Jesus. Life was easy, wasn't it? Before you met Christians, before you heard about this Jesus, it was simple. Maybe you've grown up in a Christian home and you think, oh, it'd be so much easier if I hadn't grown up in a Christian home. But you see, you can't walk away. It's not someone else's problem. You have to choose. You have to choose between truth or lies, between light or darkness, between life or death, heaven or hell. It's either love for Christ, and he has all of me, and he is who he is, and I give to him my heart and soul and mind and strength and everything because he's worthy, because he's the Son of God, the perfect man. Or I have to reject him. And either he dies for my sin, or I reject him and I die for my sin. That's why we sang that hymn, wasn't it? I heard the voice of Jesus. Have you heard the voice of Jesus tonight speaking to you from his word? Come to me. Look to me. You want to know, I'll tell you. You want answers, I'll give them to you. Listen to my voice. Come to me. Trust me. But you can't get rid of the problem. You have to choose. You see, my friend, you are on trial tonight.